Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Hello there and welcome back to This Song Is Yours. I'm Simon Fink, your host, and I'm thrilled to have you join us for episode 314. Today we're diving into the world of the incredibly talented Angie McMahon. Based in Nam, the singer-songwriter has been making waves with her most recent masterpiece, the stunning second record, Light, Dark, Light Again. This sensational album has been the talk of the town, earning Angie well-deserved critical acclaim and nominations for prestigious awards across the country in only a matter of weeks since its release. In today's episode, we're honoured to have Angie McMahon join us on the podcast as we explore the depth of her songwriting. We'll delve into the intention behind her captivating lyrics and the pivotal role that they play in her music. Angie also shares insights into her meditation practices and how embracing imperfections in her artistry leads to a more authentic and genuine sonic outcome. We'll also touch upon Angie's process of translating her intricate songs into a live setting, particularly how she's going to transform the stacked vocals from her brand new record into some compelling backing vocals performed by her own band. Now, this was honestly such a lovely conversation to have, and we want to thank Angie again for her time. We also want to say a massive thank you to Jenna from Super Duper for her help with today's episode. Before we embark on this fascinating conversation, please ensure you subscribe to This Song Is Yours on your preferred podcast platform. Stay tuned for our latest episodes by following us on social media. All the details are available in the show notes for today's episode. Thank you once again for tuning in, and let's dive into our conversation with Angie McMahon. Please welcome to This Song Is Yours, Angie McMahon. Angie, hello.
Hello, thanks for having me.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. I very much appreciate it.
No, it's exciting to be here. I'm a little bit scared of podcasts because it feels very real. It's like no one's typing up what I say later. It's just exactly what I say, all the ums and ahs. Sorry in advance. Exciting.
Firstly, I think that there's something really nice about like an imperfect conversation. And so like similar to songwriting, not to like tie it all together, but similar to songwriting, I think there's something nice in the fact that like some conversations don't go very well. But I'm not having any of those thoughts or feelings towards our conversation today. I'm excited for our chat. I don't think there's going to be any kind of dull moment.
Thank you. That's nice. And yeah, I'm happy to hear that. I'm a fan of the imperfect everything. The imperfect approach to life is where I find peace and relief. So I'm with you. It's the only way forward.
Agreed. 100% agreed. I'm feeling, very lucky to actually be able to chat to you today, because I know that with the most recent record that has come out from yourself, it was the second studio record, Light, Dark, Light Again. Firstly, congratulations on this stunning and gorgeous record.
Thank you.
How are you feeling with it? It's been out for about a month now, and from all reviews and reactions I've seen, it seems to be going like it's pretty well received.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I actually have been really, really nicely surprised by the reception. If there is negative feedback, it hasn't reached me, which is kind of a blessing. If there is, I mean, I'm sure there is, but it's just been nice because, yeah, it's been a long time between records. And I was saying to someone the other day, I wish I could go back to myself like 6 or 12 months ago and just like reassure that version of me that the record's going to come out, people are going to listen to it. It's going to be, you know, a good source of inspiration for people, or, you know, it's going to live in the world in a nice way and you can stop worrying so much about it. I feel, yeah, just relieved to be past that part of the process where you have no idea how it's going to be received, how it's going to look and sound when it's finished. And yeah, it's just such a long slog. Like, you empty so much of yourself into this thing and it takes so long to finish it and then, you know, plan the release and everything, as anyone who's made a record or something similar would know. So I feel really lucky to be at this point, yeah, a month after the release. It's felt like a big breath out, you know, a big thing off my shoulders that I don't have to worry about making any more creative decisions about. It exists now. Whatever it is, it's done.
Well, it has been, like, extremely well received since its release a month ago. I think not only in terms of, like, music critics, I know fans are absolutely loving the record as well, but I think, what was it? I know it's been nominated for the AMP Prize. It was nominated for the Triple J Award of the Year, Album of the Year Award, sorry. And that was literally, I think, after a week after release, which kind of speaks to the power of this record. So I would love to, I guess, know a little bit in terms of, because it has been a few years since Salt, which was the debut record. Was there, yeah, I guess, I know you touched on it a tiny bit, but was there nerves in relation to following it up and, I guess, the anticipation of that, you know, the difficult second record?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my mental health fluctuated and went through a full spectrum of up and down. And I think it probably was largely related to that, even when I didn't, you know, necessarily label it that way, whatever season of fear I was in. But I think it seems to be kind of inescapable from what I've heard from other artists that, you know, the second record, it does just carry a bunch of weight. And that did inform the process. I think I felt that build up maybe like a year or two into, like, not having released anything. You know, after Salt comes out, there's like this 18-month point, I think, I remember, where I'm just like, oh my God, like, the next record has to be out right now. Like, it needs to be out tomorrow and it needs to be done and it needs to be amazing. And, like, why haven't I finished it yet? And that is just not the way that it was meant to be. And then, you know, which brings us to now, which is, yeah, like, another 18 months or 2 years after that point. Luckily that feeling did die down, because it eventually was just like, just put something in, you know, just let it be exactly what it was meant to be. But definitely there was some peak of stress around that in the middle. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember the first, I guess, even iteration of a song that you wrote following that kind of realization?
Good question. I mean, there were songs that I was writing that didn't end up on the record. The one that comes to mind is Music's Coming In. It's song number 12 on the record. I'm really glad it made it on. And it was, I think it was around that time, just trying to encourage myself to, yeah, it would have been about 18 months after Salt came out, just trying to encourage myself to make anything and to let it be in flow and let it be real and raw and not come from a place of, I better write a perfect song right now when I sit down at the piano, you know. So that song was sort of an exercise in really just writing anything and letting it be vulnerable and real. And we were able to protect that when we made it in the studio as well, that whole feeling, which I'm really, really grateful for. It was a lot of fun to record that one. So that, you know, that writing style of really just talking to myself and being like, hey, it's okay, stop being afraid, just look after yourself, just make some music, like that, that was probably around that time. I was really just writing to myself, like in conversation with myself at that point, and it was a nice exercise, and I think that did carry over into some of the other songs and the rest of the record as well. Yeah,
I would 100% agree with that. I think that there's and I promise I'll stop, like, continually kind of complimenting yourself and the record. I do want to obviously talk about the positive parts of it. It is there is a beautiful balancing act that you've done with this record in terms of, I think, the record itself seems to be dealing with anxiety, unease, grief in some parts, and then the kind of flip side of that, as you said, like the realizing that it's kind of okay and the acceptance of certain parts of that. Who was it with? I think there was an incredible article in, I think it was The Guardian, by Giselle Nguyen, who, did you see, you're nodding where I'm thinking you know which one I'm talking about. She went for a bit of a walk and this record really seemed to ease a lot of that anxiety. Are you, I guess firstly, what's it like reading that kind of review for a record?
Well, I don't know Giselle, but I feel like I owe her a message wherever she is, because that review was so great to read. It was the first thing that I read the day the album came out. My dad had texted to me and he's like, look, an album review. And, you know, I wasn't necessarily intending to be online all day and read, you know, what people thought of it. But that was what I read first thing. And I just immediately felt so fulfilled, you know, like satisfied with the intention of the record, and I think what turned out to be the overall lesson of the thing and the theme of it was just to be received by someone in that way where, she just said it helped her feel better ultimately, and that was the best thing to hear, and really made me feel a lot of relief from the moment that I woke up that day. So that was really beautiful. And that is what, you know, the best moments of making the record for me were in moments like that as well, like walking in nature and either coming up with a song, like working on a song idea or listening back to a demo or a mix or whatever. That's where it made the most sense and where I was finding relief at the time and still am. So I was just so happy that she, absorbed it that way and wrote that in the opening paragraph of her review. I was like, oh, thank fuck.
It is a fantastic review. I'll try and make sure I, along with all your details and places where people can buy the record, I'll try and include a link to that that review as well, because it is, I think, a very gorgeous review. One word that you used then was intention, which I think is a really important word in terms of how important is it that you're able to convey those feelings when you are recording and trying to get the songs in their, I don't want to say purest form in terms of like stripped back, but I mean purest form in terms of the exact emotion you're trying to convey with a recording.
I mean, what I found in the process of this record was that you can't necessarily be in control. I found that in so many ways. You can't be in control of the ultimate complete finished version of the sound. You know, you have a certain amount of control and hopefully it comes out the way that you wanted it to. But I think the intention is the most important part. And I think if you're clear on what you're like going into creation with, like the seed that you're planting, then there's this really beautiful practice of being able to trust that that will come across. And I think like it's just like anything, I'm trying to apply this, you know, Buddhist wisdom or whatever, that you control the things that you can control and, you know, what space you can carve out for that. And then let the universe do its work and let the song be how it is, or the record be how it is meant to be. But you get to feel like, like peace at knowing that you intended it to be a certain way. Does that make sense? I mean, it kind of like, it was the same in the studio. Like there's other people involved. There's a bunch of factors, time pressures, et cetera. And I would just like show up to the studio today trying to be my best self and then like see what comes out of it and hope that that comes across in the recording and that energy comes across in the recording. And like maybe it does and maybe it doesn't, but I can be at peace with myself knowing that I, you know, tried to do it that way. And I'm really just rambling. I don't know if anything that I just said came out the way that I meant it to in my brain, but The intention is an important part. I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm thinking about this meditation that I do sometimes. It's like a guided meditation. And you do it at the start of the day and you think of the way that you want to feel that day or the word that you want to embody. And you think of it as a seed in your hand and you focus on that seed and the way that that feeling would grow in your body. And then you kind of let it go, you know, you like blow it out of your hands or whatever. You send it off into the universe and then you don't have to think about it anymore. You can, if you want to, you can return to the idea, but you can also just trust that that has been, you know, planted, that seed, and you don't have to be worrying about it the whole time. And I think that is sort of something that I was trying to take into the creative process as well, just because I tend to worry. So, yeah.
I feel like in a weird, not roundabout way, but like almost what we were talking about right at the start in terms of if you're focusing too much on something being perfect, it doesn't kind of work, where it's the things with imperfections that are kind of more natural and come across as a more genuine piece of work, whatever that may be, whether it's a manifesting the day ahead or this stunning record. So I can definitely appreciate that, yeah.
Yeah, and you're carving out space to trust that you can flow with whatever happens and like whatever surprises come along and respond to them, and that feels better than trying to grip the wheel, you know, and trying to really like know what's around every corner and know exactly how it's going to sound and know what it's meant to be. And I mean, because this record took me like quite a while to make, I just kept coming up against, you know, different roadblocks, different ways to, you know, be hard on myself around it. And I just had to keep on remembering that, like, okay, well, this is the roadblock. How are you going to flow with it? Rather than like, how are you going to grip the wheel and keep it on course, even though there's a brick wall in front of you? You know, like it sort of was important to carve out space to just adapt and trust the intention. Yeah.
100%. I can, yeah, very much appreciate that. I was wondering if you might allow me to be a little bit selfish and ask about my favorite track on the record.
Please.
Again, the entire record is stunning. I found myself returning time and time again to Fish, which is the third track on the record. There seems to be something both like calming, mysterious, and loving about that track all in the one. And I was wondering if you might, after I stop having like word vomit and not be able to speak properly, where that song came from and what was the inspiration behind it.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Yeah, I also think that's one of my favorites. That was one of the songs that came earlier on. I wrote that in 2020. I was alone in my bedroom. I'd just been listening obsessively to War on Drugs, and I sat down at my desk, and I just wanted to make a demo that sounded like the feeling that was in my body. You know, like, I guess I get a certain vibe from that band, and I wanted to create from that place. And it just kind of came out, at least the first half of the song just sort of fell out in that brief writing session, and it felt really good. And this was, yeah, I don't know, 8 or 9 months after Salt had come out, you know, a few months into lockdown. I wasn't feeling very confident about writing and creating. And then on the other side of that, having the first half of that song, I felt like I had carved out the space for the world that the record was going to exist in. I felt really good about the way that it sounded. I tried to like keep that sonic sound, the sonic decisions that I made in that demo throughout the whole recording of that song. I recorded the song several times because I just really wanted to get it right and nail that feeling. And I also wanted to write a whole record that sounded like that song. And that was kind of one of the blocks, is that it just, you know, that one came, and then the other songs were other things entirely. And I had to let go of it at some point, that I wasn't writing a War on Drugs record. But that song like remained really special and inspiring. And I had never written something like it, and I don't exactly know what it is that I love so much about that one, but I'm with you. I really love that one.
It definitely did. There is something truly magical about that song, so thank you for sharing that with me. And now that you've kind of mentioned the War on Drugs, I can see certain like sonic similarities without maybe it being like a direct, oh, that's a War on Drugs kind of take. Like, you can definitely hear that it might have influenced that. So, thank you again for sharing that.
Yeah, well, I remember listening. They have a song called Suffering, and I remember that was the beginning of the Fish song, which uses probably the word suffering and then buffering, you know, something like that. I think it was from listening specifically to that song. And I kind of like that. I mean, I don't think of that as plagiarism. I think of it as like a spark, you know. And
100%.
And then, it became like I wanted the song to sound like you're underwater. Like, I really took the image of like the fish. Someone told me later on they didn't understand, like, what is this song about? And I thought it was really obvious, but to me it was like, oh, there's plenty of fish in the sea. It's like that metaphor, like your partner is your fish kind of thing. But I don't know if I'm needing to explain that to people, but I guess you can interpret it however you want. Did you get that?
Yes. I wanted to say that it kind of came across, and I thought that was maybe part of it, is like the whole fish in the sea and you're my fish.
Mm.
I obviously, again, songwriting is up for interpretation, but again, I would not want to insult anyone, but I thought it was kind of obvious as well. So I think you conveyed it quite well. For some, maybe it is just a different thing.
Yeah, everyone hears the song differently, I guess, and they're listening to different things. But that's nice. Yeah, my favorite bit was building the end, like stacking all these vocals on top of each other. And I built the song kind of wishing that I had my band there, but we were in lockdown, obviously, and I couldn't, you know, write and record with them. So I had a drum loop that my drummer Lockie had recorded way back when for me, and I was using it just to like write on top of. And so I looped his drums and I stacked all these vocals on top of each other, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna get the whole band to sing all these BVs. And now I think it's kind of the bane of their existence to be like belting all these vocals, but it was really fun to like try and make this underwater choir feeling. Yeah.
No, I absolutely love it. It's an incredible track. So for anyone listening to the podcast who hasn't listened to the record, please listen to the whole record, but also very much listen to Fish. Angie, I was wondering if you might indulge us into your first like foray into songwriting and where that kind of spark initially took place.
Good question. I think I had a singing class. Like, I was seeing a singing teacher when I was about 14. I don't know if I'd written anything before then. Maybe I had, but he was kind of like, are you writing songs? And I was like, oh, you know, like, I've written a song before. And he was just like, you need to start writing songs now. And just like, you know, you just need someone to tell you, like, go and write songs. Why aren't you writing songs? And he maybe gave me permission. And the songs that I started writing were really, really depressing. They were just like, I would write in these weird metaphors about like, you know, big heartbreak and darkness and pain. And like, I mean, I didn't have any kind of semblance of a romantic relationship in my like teenage life. I was just like living in dreamland and I guess turning my angst into like, yeah, like weird poems and playing piano, like probably inspired by Missy Higgins. Like, the Sound of White record was where I guess, like, yeah, learned how to write to an instrument. I think I was inspired by that style, and I still am. I'd be really scared to find any of those old recordings. I don't know, I loved singing, and I loved singing feelings out, and the words were just, I didn't really have anything to write about, but I was more just like using my voice as a way to, you know, express big emotions, which I had. I had really big emotions. And so I would sit at the piano and just try and pour things out of myself, you know. And that's all I can tell you. I can't really remember them.
I feel like a good kind of, what is the word? Like the origin story of like where it began for yourself. So I kind of love that. The fact that, where did I read this? I think even though singing came a little bit later, you were always somewhat musical. Like even as a kid, like playing piano after dinner and stuff.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I was learning pop songs on the piano, and I can't really nail down the timeline of like what came first and when. Like I can maybe nail down when the confidence came, but I was learning classical piano since I was really young, and I had a very patient, lovely Yamaha teacher who agreed to start teaching me like Maroon 5 and like pop songs that I wanted to learn. Like, you know, She Will Be Loved. I remember learning that on piano, and like, I can't remember who else, but even just like show tunes and stuff. Like I was always so excited by learning popular music, and so she'd be like, you know, if you learn your exam songs and if you practice this Bach thing, then we can do the pop song at the end. And then I got really into learning pop chords, and I stopped reading the sheet music and just making things up with my ear. So it was listening to other songs and learning to sing other songs. I was doing that for quite a while before I really started to shape my own like verses and choruses, you know.
Yeah. You're just becoming well versed in others so that you can build your own.
Totally. Yeah. Learn the chords and then figure out the rest. Yeah.
I know that there's a lot of people excited to see this record in a live setting. I know that where is it? Where are we now? I think actually next year, which seems wild to say, next year you're going to be taking the record around the country as part of Laneway Festival. How are you feeling in terms of taking these songs out to people for a live debut of these songs?
Yeah, really, really excited. It's something I've been looking forward to for a long time. Like playing shows it's just such a joy, and I thought about it so much, you know, when we couldn't play shows, I became much more thoughtful and much more grateful around like being able to have that experience. And so I think I've been really looking forward to that time with people and time with the songs in like a live sense. And yeah, the plan is just to spend all of next year touring it. I guess it'll be nice to be able to take it wherever it will be accepted by people and wherever I can afford to take it. We played a couple shows with the band, like just to get a feel for it, and it's just feeling so good. It's so nice to be able to bring the record to life like that. You know, it was a lot of it was recorded overseas, so I didn't have my band with me, and it's been really beautiful to get in the room and learn them together and kind of inject new life into them again and find out what they want to sound like on stage, like what the songs want to be. So it's a great creative process. It feels like a new, there's a power source, and then you get to like keep charging it up with new ideas and stuff, you know. It's like, yeah, I think it's going to be cool. Touring is obviously quite different now to how it was when we were doing it before, and it comes with new challenges, but it's just such a great thing to be able to be in the room with people and like cry and sing. I love it.
100% agreed. I know myself and some friends will be heading to Adelaide Laneway to see you play these songs. Is there a song in particular? Because I always feel like it's an unfair question to ask, you know, what's your favourite? Even though I mentioned my favourite song on the record, I feel like it's unfair to ask the artist. In terms of a live setting, is there one that changes for you that kind of is a favourite to play live, I guess?
Well, we haven't played the whole record yet. I think when we get around to doing a headline show, we will have every song in the set list. At the moment, it's kind of a blend of the old and the new. And it's actually Fish, probably, is the answer to your question. Like, I really love playing Fish. Like, yeah. it's just got, like, that drive behind it, and it feels so big, and you get to yell a little bit and... what else? I like Making It Through. That's another one of my favorites on the record, and I really like getting to play that live. I get the crowd to sing the Light, Dark, Light Again bit back. I like forcing people to be a choir and have a bit of a chant together. So, yeah, that's really fun. And I also like Exploding. I think that is... It's a very cathartic song. Again, it's an opportunity for me just to like yell and scream basically. And that song kind of asks you to give everything that you physically have to it. And it feels good afterwards, like going for a run or something, you know, it's a great catharsis. Yeah.
I absolutely love that. Well, yeah, as I mentioned, I know that there's quite a few people very excited to see these songs in their live setting. So that is something for all of us to look forward to. Angie, we would usually ask our guests what they're currently listening to. Is there anything at the moment that's on high rotation for yourself?
Yeah, I actually just have this record that I found this week that I'm really loving. It's by an artist called Lorraine. She is Canadian and it's really beautiful. I can't even remember what the record's called. I'm going to find the name of it. It's a cool name. Bear with me. And also there's an artist called Blonde Shell, who it turns out is also going to be on the on the Laneway tour. And they're amazing. That band is so good. Leftovers is the name of the Lorraine album. I just looked that up. That's really good. And also my brother just got me onto this record that I hadn't heard before, but it's by the Magnetic Fields and it's called 69 Love Songs. It's like from the 90s. I don't know if you know that record, but it's like 3 hours long and it's got literally 69 love songs on it. I mean, I don't know if it's like 69 exactly, but I'm guessing it is. And it's like easy to disappear into and you just have no idea what's coming next. I'm really liking that.
It's definitely, you definitely have to put aside some time for that last one, but three absolutely solid choices and a good kind of mix of like similar, I want to say similar vein, but also like very different kind of indie rock in a way for the three.
Yeah, totally. Like that's just this week. If I'm being honest, like I haven't been listening to a lot of music this year. I've sort of been overwhelmed by the like thoughts that I've had to have around all my own songs and record. And so I've just been listening to like podcasts and just like ambient, you know, like meditations and stuff. And I think probably with the release of the record, I finally feel like, you know, I can let that go and get back into records again, which has been a nice feeling. But yeah, it's been a funny break. And the other thing that comes to mind is this isn't released yet, but I have this friend, her name is Annie Rose Maloney, and she's working on a record that she sent me the mixes for because me and some other local songwriters have like sung, we've been doing the BVs on it, and it's just like, oh my god, it's so good. I don't know when she's going to put it out, I don't know when it's going to be ready, but I hope it's next year. And yeah, she's just so good. It's like incredible songs. So that's the other secret record I'm listening to.
That's very exciting. Well, I will try and put her details in the show notes of the pod as well so that anyone listening can go and follow her and then keep an eye out for whenever that record does grace us with its presence.
Yay. Yeah, that's good. She'll hate me for it. She'll hate the pressure, but she'll live.
Hopefully it's just not spotlight. I don't want to say spotlighting because you said the pressure. Hopefully it's just going to bring some new fans to gather around and enjoy her music as well. But until that point, Angie, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. I do appreciate it. And congrats on Light Dark. Like, again, it's a fantastic record. Details on where people can buy it will be in the show notes. But yeah, thank you again for coming onto the podcast.
Thanks, Simon. Thanks for having me. It's so nice to meet you, and thanks for your support. It's lovely.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.